and welcome to another episode of Fool's Daily. I'm Dave, and today I'm joined once more by Rich from Alpha Strike Radio.
Hiya.
And as you can guess by Rich being back on the show, we're going to go talk about Privateer Press, Hordes and War Machine once more.
Yeah, it does seem to be in my niche, really. It's not all well, I do, but it is what I mostly do regarding games.
I have to say, for the last few years, especially with you and Nathan's podcast, it's what I know you for now, really, I think.
Yeah, I think... I have been recognised by my voice in a number of occasions now, with the oddest being picking up a package from my local delivery office, and the youth
really?
Behind the counter said, are you that fella from?
Cool! There you go, your Warhol moments come to fruition.
I have had my 15 minutes of fame in a post office.
Oh, honey, we were all so lucky, eh?
Yeah. it was good fun. Anyway, I digress. So,
well, that's what the show's known for. So, I think what we're going to talk about specifically within Hordes and War Machine this time is about the organised play and what they do to help support that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the organised play for Hordes and War Machine is that even though it's my main system, I still think it was like a trendsetter in what they do. I think that they have shown other people how it should be.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. I think when you combine it with the tight rules that they write and they continue to improve and clarify formally on their forums with their formalised play rules as well, they certainly have shown other systems a way of doing it and probably one of the better ways.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's... It's a good system, and it's been well developed, and they put a lot of time of effort into it, and it goes through, I think quite extensive testing prior to its release, and it's very solid, is how I would describe it. Of all the game systems I've played, this is the most sort of user-friendly, I think, is probably the way when it comes to applying it in a tournament environment. I think this is the best one I've ever seen.
Yeah. I guess we should sort of start with quickly mentioning that out of the rule book, there are actually some scenarios.
There are.
I have to say, I've never played a Mark II one, though. I've played some of the Mark I ones.
I've never played any of the Mark II ones. I think this is... When we started, we played the scenarios out of the rule book because I think we thought that was probably... how events was going to go. I don't think it was till later that we happened upon the Steamroller pack after we'd been playing for a little while.
Yeah, I certainly that's my experience looking at it. I mean, obviously you learn the game with, and this is what a lot of people put it down for, with just the caster kill.
Yeah.
And then you probably migrate, grow and go play some of the scenarios out of the book, which I've said, the Mark II I haven't looked at, so I can't say how balanced they are. Some of the Mark I's were a bit odd.
There was interesting ones where you deployed around like a 12-inch circle or something in the middle. I can't remember.
Did you ever play the one with the fire that was growing?
No. We never played that one.
That was really bizarre, I have to say. Interesting, but yeah.
The other one was interesting. I think eventually it agreed to become Mosh Pit.
Yeah.
But it wasn't quite at the time. Because of the Steamroller pack, I've never played any of the scenarios in the book because the ones in the Steamroller pack are so good.
Yeah, and I guess that brings us into talking about what most people would recognise as the organised play for Privateer Press, and that is the Steamroller document.
It is indeed.
I think it's in its fourth or fifth year now?
I think it might be more than that.
Okay.
I'm pretty certain they had Steamroller in Mark I. So I think it's been going for quite a while, and it's developed and gone from strength to strength over the years. I mean, one of the things about Hordes and War Machine is the scoring system has always caused sort of a bit of controversy because it doesn't lend itself to racking up points. Person with the most points is the winner. So if you kill loads of your opponent's stuff, it doesn't translate well into getting a game winner. And I think they realised that early on because they had some early packs where person with the most VPs at the end as a tiebreaker could win it. And then it just devolved to sort of like VP sniping.
Which we all know from other games.
Yeah, absolutely. But then they've certainly learned from that, you know,
Yeah, I guess we should sort of say the key point in the Steamroller pack is that it gives you two ways to win a game of War Machine now.
Yep.
So you've still got the kill enemy caster as one way to win. But what they then introduce is other objectives and to win the game within the packet.
Yeah, there's...
And these are around capturing objectives and holding zones, aren't they, generally?
Yeah, and you can score what they refer to as control points. And you can score control points in different ways. And you can score different amounts of control points in different ways. And I think there's 12 this year, I think.
I think there is 12 this year.
12 scenarios, and they've trimmed it down. Because I think the last pack had... a significant more than 12 in, and they took essentially the best ones, tweaked them, because it has to be said that the Steamroller pack, and it's not just scenarios and stuff, it's guidance on how to run an event and how long your time should be and all this kind of stuff, how long one round should be, how many rounds you should have to play for the number of players you've got. It's a pretty comprehensive sort of document.
Yeah, I guess we should say that if we sort of talk about events, the difference between probably what in the UK we used to know from the WPS days and it was racking up points and the person with the most points at the end won the tournament.
Yeah.
Hordes of War Machine goes to a different way, don't they? It's basically the last man standing undefeated is the winner.
Yeah, there should always be an undefeated at the end of an event based on how it works. So if you've got 16 players, you play 4 rounds. If you've got up to 32, you play 5. Up to 64 is 6 rounds. And then up to 128 is 7 rounds.
Yeah, 7 rounds, which I think is the largest event there's ever been in the UK.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I can't remember how big last year's UK Nationals was. I suspect it was under 128. I can't remember.
I think, yeah, the last time when it was still at the Expo, I think it... was the 128, or as close as damn it to that sort of level.
Yeah, I can't remember how big last year's was at the Northwest Gaming Centre.
At Northwest Gaming Centre?
I can't remember.
Yeah, probably similar.
But it was full, anyway. But I think we probably played 7 games there.
Yeah.
And then you should have somebody on 7 wins, because a draw is nigh on impossible.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever known a straight draw in a game.
Yeah, and that is one of the strengths of the packs. It goes down to about 5 tiebreakers, isn't there?
Yeah.
5 levels of tiebreakers to try and make sure that there is a winner if in the unfortunate event that somebody times out.
Yeah, so you've got your initial two ways of winning are by assassination victory, which is a bit of a... I think when we certainly started initially playing this and we moved from Fantasy and players moving from 40k and places like that, Flames of War, losing one model ending the game seemed really harsh. So we did play it. We played at a couple of events where that rule was taken out, but actually it leads to some ridiculously silly things. so it quickly came back again. And you just, the more you play, you just learn to, you know, protect your caster and stop those kind of things happening.
Yeah.
There's a scenario victory where you clock up control points by controlling zones or objectives or flags. I think those are the 3. And then there's 4 tiebreakers.
Yeah.
That should, you know, I've never seen. So if the game ends, the first one is Warcaster, Warlock, Death, or the ones you've got remaining. But yeah. I think in the UK tournament scene, it's only ever been one caster game. We've never played multiple caster games.
No, because you're looking at 75 to 100 points for that sort of level of game, I think, for multiple casters, yeah, aren't you?
I played... John Snape used to wrote the tournament pack for the WPS a couple of years, and initially it was going to be... one year it was going to be 2 casters. And we played a 2 caster game here, and it just took us forever. I played with Nathan at my house, it was just crazy. And then the second one is control points. So if you've not ended the game, but you've scored more, but not enough to win, then you win on that one. And then it's army points in zones or around flags. And
that can change per... depending on what scenario is, how where your models have to be on the table to get that, which is sort of saying.
Yeah. And then the last one is how much stuff's been destroyed.
Yeah.
And the reason that one comes last, I mean, I suppose that's still your VP thing, but it's slipped down so far that nobody plays for 4th tiebreaker.
No, I mean, I've certainly had games finished on the third.
Yeah.
Or the second, but I've never been into the fourth myself. I mean, to get to a situation where you've got equal points in the zones, you've probably actually got to the point where both sides have got virtually nothing left at that stage.
Absolutely. And then it's just, you know, it'll be a few point difference between, you know, whatever's been killed. But it just leads to mean that the tiered tiebreaker thing means that there's never ever a draw, so there will be a winner or loser from a game.
Yeah. And that brings you to that ethos of the last man standing is the winner.
Yeah.
And he's beaten all comers.
Yep, and he's seen off the best of the best, effectively, because it's Swiss system. So if you win, you get put into a winner's bracket, which does mean that if you lose your first round, you're out. You can't win it.
which does bring some interesting things from which I've not seen yet in the UK from the American meta, where they play their game slightly differently to us, where people drop out.
Yeah, I think with the majority of their tournaments being conventions, there's often something else to do. Whereas, if you go to Gen Con, for example, since the last one, Gen Con Masters, and you lose in the first round, you can drop out and either watch the other game, seems to be reasonably popular, or go and do Gen Con things, and I think it seems to be the same for a lot of them, or in some cases in the qualifiers, you lose your first round, you drop out, and then you go and get some sleep so you can play in the next qualifier.
And I guess the coming of the SmogCon that's going to be as close to an American convention as I think the UK's ever seen yet next year, I guess we'll maybe see some of that starting to appear in the UK scene.
I am guilty of this. I played in a Midnight Madness at SmogCon last year, and I lost. I didn't drop after the first one, but I lost two rounds, and then I was out.
I mean, what sort of time are we talking about that then?
That was 2:30 in the morning, probably.
I think that's probably fair enough.
And then Nathan was making fun of me because he said, I'll still be up playing casual games by the time you've gone to bed. And actually, it was true because I went to bed shortly after that and he didn't roll until 4 a.m. having, you know, played practice games or whatever, because he said he was trying to wangle my place in the event because he wanted to try and qualify for the Masters and I wasn't bothered, you see. So. rules for tournaments, I suppose. So that's, I mean, there's a number of different scenarios, there's a number of different ways of winning them. Models and painted models.
This is one of the the shocks, I think, that a lot of UK gamers sort of, well, certainly when for tournaments were sort of started to be organised, certainly shocked a lot of people with the fact that in the baseline rule set, you don't have to have your models painted.
No. You don't. They're not undercoated or anything. They have to be mostly built and stuck to bases.
Yeah, and the right bases.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Correct size bases. I mean, base size and, like, our markings have to be marked. So the horizontal line across the front that separates the front and back half of the base, across the line of sight is kind of important. And you do have a back arc. You don't have 360-degree vision.
Yeah.
And it is controversial, but the reason they did it was to encourage take-up. And I think your phrase that you mentioned previously, like before we started recording, that was a cracker, actually. It drops the barrier to entry.
It does drop the barrier to entry. I think that's why they did it again with the convention style idea. And again, we've got to sort of realise, you know, the private press, they're a company, they're trying to make money.
Oh, yeah.
And they want to get your toys and excited. So if you're at an American convention and then, you know, the first day you pick up a brand new model, you're going to want to play it. So you build it overnight and you play it the next day.
And that's exactly what they're allowed to do. If you buy a figure at a convention, then you can use it in the events as long as you build it. And that's, you know, that's gone down quite well, I think, over the years. That's happened quite a lot.
Yeah.
And again, it's an American thing. It doesn't happen here because we don't get releases like that at events. Although we might do, maybe, possibly.
SmogCon will be interesting next year.
But it's just one of those things that it encourages people to play. When you're a small company and you want to increase your popularity in your game, they said, well, you know, let's tell players they don't need to paint. Now, this is a good thing because it means that people pick up the game quickly. But
there is still quite a lot of unpainted armies out there, and I am partly guilty for this.
Oh, I'm very guilty. I've got still got a mound of Legion stuff that's... Some of it's been painted, once and been stripped, which is probably really counterproductive for me. But, I mean, I can feel two forces fully painted now, and I will be at the weekend, which is interesting. But it doesn't mean I'm picking because it's painted rather than I'm picking because it might win me games. But hey.
Yeah, I have got two or three circle lists that I could field painted. And the Signar that I'm playing with at the moment, I've borrowed from other people, is mostly all painted as well. But because you don't have to, there's no impetus to paint.
Which I don't think is a particularly a horrendous thing.
No.
I mean, if event organisers want to be painted, and this is one of the other things about Steamroller, the pack, there are add-on options that you can put into. And a tournament organizer can require fully painting.
Yeah, absolutely.
If he wishes to.
You can contact Fools Daily on
you
Twitter.
Can, I mean, I,
at Fools Underbar Daily.
I don't know.
Or our email,
JTY,
Daily
was, used to run quite a lot of the Hordes of War Machine stuff. Initially in the UK, he kind of championed it and sort of ran a lot of events. And he required, for some of the events, one list fully painted.
Yeah,
and there are things happening to encourage people to paint. So the Golden Thrall coins, that was John Webb's thing.
Yeah, and again, this is something I have no problem with, that because the people that want to paint and do paint, they're rewarded, but it's not necessarily going to be rewarded by helping them win a tournament particularly.
Yeah, and I...
So the tournament's won on your playability.
Yes, this is a system that has no place for soft scores. No, definitely not. And I think the club challenge 1 year did have soft scores.
But that's to fit in. That was to try and fit in with the rest of the club challenge ethos, wasn't it?
It was
a common scoring system across all systems,
but I don't,
which makes admin a bit easier.
Yeah, I'd done quite well gaming wise, but my painting score put me in second above the chap who was third. So, you know, it's like. It's rewarded. There are a couple of different systems to reward it. Random prize draws for anybody who's brought a painted list. All those things have happened, which I think is great. But, you know.
Yeah, so the encouragement is there to paint within the War Machine scene, some of the gamers seem to think it isn't. It is there.
But if you don't want
to, I think it's the right level.
Have to.
No.
But there's nothing, there's no prerequisite either way. I think it cuts out a reasonable amount of snobbery because it's attracted people from a wide variety of things, because it was one of the first games I came across that had figures and cards. So you've got an element of like traditional wargaming and then an element of like that whole collectible card game, living card game kind of deal.
There's almost a deck building element to the game.
Yeah, almost. And it sort of like it brought in people from sort of Magic the Gathering and stuff, and people who've got no experience in building and painting models could play this game. And I think that's why it grew so quickly.
I think there's two other things that we probably want to touch on briefly about that differentiate it. And the first thing is multiple lists at an event, which I think might surprise a few people coming from a 40K or a fantasy background.
Yeah, this can be a bit rock, paper, scissors. So you could build a list... And it is possible that it'll run up against something that it will really be an uphill struggle to beat because of the special rules or abilities or whatever it happens to be game-wise. Like, say, your army relies on collecting souls and you come up against something that denies souls from dead things. That's going to be an uphill struggle for you. So what you can have is a second or potentially three-list event where you can bring multiple lists to cover different situations, scenarios or matchups, depending on your choice. When we first started, I think this is relatively common, we used to take a list to face War Machine armies and a list to face Horde armies.
I still think there's certain factions that's still quite valid.
Yeah, and then there's other things that you can build lists that are designed to purely win on scenario. Or really well geared to assassinating casters.
And this is, I guess, what I meant by the deck building element of the game.
Yeah, there's.
Because you're looking at, not only are you looking at what your list can do, you're also thinking about how it's going to match up to opponents' lists.
Yeah.
And what situations you'd use it in.
I think there are some players who
contemplate the national matter, so things that are popular and doing the rounds, and build their lists to stand a better chance against whatever's popular at the moment, because there is, you know, some casters are more popular and the game is constantly changing with new releases and stuff, so lists are constantly developing. It's not quite net decking. It's not like you and your mate playing at home and you know that he always uses unit X, so therefore you're going to put in something that counters that.
Yeah.
Because you don't know for certain what everybody going to event will be bringing. Sometimes you might know what faction they're using, but it gives you an option to tweak and tailor your lists, and so you can do that. I mean, it's the other thing, you could bring a list that's got lots and lots of heavy armour in it and a list that's got lots of light infantry in it. And it just gives your opponent sort of like fits deciding what they should play against it. But so it's all become part of the game.
And I guess the other thing that's probably different is the use of chess clocks or timers. I think that's quite new for the UK as well, though.
I remember no one... played time turns, and then at the UK Nationals one year everybody turned up and they broke out all these kitchen timers and said, right, you've got, I think it might have been 15 minute turns at that point in time, something like that.
Right.
And the turn limit has come down, so effectively the most popular size is 50 points and you get 10 minutes to do your turn, which sounds, I mean,
it sounds horrific when you first sort of think about it.
Yeah, it does, but it's not terrible, actually. And my initial worry was that, having played games of Warhammer that took two to two and a half hours, where you had a bit of a chat as well and maybe went for a drink partway through your game, I was worried that time turns would stop that kind of happy camaraderie type feeling you get from playing the game against somebody else, but it doesn't. I've never found it to be a particular problem.
No, I've never particularly found it to be a problem either. And we should say there's another way of playing. The while time turns is one option, there's now something called chess clock or death clock, as they like to call
death
it.
Death clock, where you'll get a fixed amount of time to play your game. So you can spend, say, 60 minutes, so you can spend as long as you like doing your turns, but if your 60 minutes runs out, you lose.
So it's a true chess clock environment, but you lose the game. Again, I think it's interesting, and it certainly brings a new dynamic to the game.
It does. I mean, if you know in advance whether it will be time turns or death clock, then you can tailor your list. So if you've got a bigger list that has more bodies in it that you can't get to work in 10 minutes, you could take it to a timed event. I played a game yesterday against co-host Nathan, and he rocks up with his list and says, we're playing Death Clock, by the way, because he's got a list with a lot of dudes. And I said, we're not playing time turns. He said, no, I can't make it work under time turns. So he brought a list for... So you can specify lists for, you know, the timing as well. So I think I'm going to an event this weekend, which is time turns, I think. And then the UK Nationals in September, I believe, is going to be Death Clock. So,
yeah, I'm at one of the WAC events this weekend, and we're playing Deathlock, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm at a Midland Steamroller event run by Mr. Chom.
Yes.
But, I mean, the other thing to mention about time turns is that once per game you do get a 5-minute extension.
Yeah, for the 50-point level, Or a extension so that you can, if that certain turn year you need to do a little bit more, you've got that one banker where you can extend your turn.
Yeah, often that's a feat turn. but you know, it's...
Right, we are running a super long. I suppose one more thing we should sort of say is how active is the scene in the UK?
Very.
Yeah, it's massive, isn't it?
It is. It wasn't. I remember when we started, there weren't very many of us, to the point where an event in Chorley pulled some guys from London who came to play, and so like it was people from all over the country went to a 16-man event in a working men's club in Chorley, you know, which is a fair way from London, and it's, you know, not the most hospitable of places, I suppose, northern weather and all that, because it was like October, November time or something, I think, to the point now where
events are often full. Mod sold out in hours.
Yeah.
UK National sold out in 2 hours.
But I think there's a good mix between the very big events, like the SmogCon and Nationals, and lots of local, small, maybe 16-player events.
Yeah, I think
if you get out on the forums, you can generally find events. Most weekends, there's going to be Hordes and War Machine events somewhere in the UK.
Yeah, absolutely. To the point where I think Matt Townsend, who is, I'd say up and coming, but has come up, and he's now playing a lot. I mean, he played a ridiculous number of events last year, and he found, for instance... He played at Dark... This weekend just gone. He played at Dark Sphere Games in London, and then he played at the West Bridgeford in Nottingham on the Sunday. So, he went... You can do that. You can find those events at weekends and stuff. And the only
reason
he's not coming next weekend is work or something. So
stupid work. Yeah. And we should say that the places to look are... The Privateer Press Forums events are listed in the UK there, but it can be hard to find.
Warhammer Forum is a good...
The Warhammer Forum has a good, quite an active...
Privateer
place.
Press section, there's a lot of events posted in there.
Yeah. And I believe there is a calendar still, isn't there? I don't know if it's a Google calendar. I don't know if that's kept up to date.
There is a Google calendar. I do believe it's still kept up to date. And I don't know the link, but you can access it through the Warhammer Forum.
Yes, if people sort of search for the Warhammer Forum, head into the Privateer Press section, all the details are there.
Absolutely, and I think that's probably everything about their organised plus. Although they did do, I think they're still doing, they do Masters Trophies, and they do...
You can certainly get official
prize
kits.
Packs, yeah.
Prize packages, yeah. But I don't know whether press gangers have to order them.
Yeah,
but that's probably a conversation for another show.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, probably.
Maybe we even get one.
if you'll put them out after the unpainted model scandal.
That's very true.
He's not a fan, is he? The boss.
He isn't. The boss, no. No, he isn't. But hey, he likes shows, so we'll be fine. Right, well, thanks very much for joining me again.
No, it's been great fun. Thank you very much for having me on.
That's great. And all that's left to say is I've been Dave.
I've been Rich.
Good night.
Good night.